Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last month, when Congress passed the spending bill to avoid a government shutdown, no one expected it to include a hidden rider that has nothing to do with the budget, but there it was. The rider protects Monsanto and other pesticide and biotech giants from litigation in the face of health risks. People expressed outrage on social media about the so-called Monsanto Protection Act, but no one knew how it got into the bill. And then Roy Blunt, a senator Republican from Missouri, told Politico's David Rogers that he, quote, worked with Monsanto to craft the rider. Mother Jones' Tom Philpott has been following this, and he writes that the admission shines a light on Senator Blunt's ties to Monsanto, whose office is located in the senator's home state. According to Open Secrets, Monsanto first started contributing to Blunt back in 2008. When it handed him $10,000. At that point, Blunt was serving in the House. In 2010, when Blunt ran for the Senate, Monsanto upped its contribution to just over $44,000. And then last year, the GMO giant enriched Blunt's campaign war chest by $64,000. More than 250,000 people have signed a petition. Concerned citizens protested outside of the White House, urging President Obama not to sign the provision. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about the so-called Monsanto Protection Act. What does it do exactly? What does this mean for organic farmers and those of us who are concerned about the environment, health, and genetically modified food? Today, we're joined by Dave Murphy, Executive Director of Food Democracy Now. That's a grassroots organization dedicated to building a sustainable food system that protects the environment, sustains farmers, and nourishes families. Food Democracy Now has been organizing the campaign against the Monsanto provision. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. We're also joined by Marcia Ishii-Eitman, a senior scientist at the Pesticide Action Network, an organization that works to replace the use of pesticides with sound and socially just alternatives. And Marcia joins us from Oakland. Hi, Marcia. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much.
Great to have you. So, Marcia, let's start off with you. How much of a surprise was this, and how did you find out about what people are calling the Monsanto Protection Act?
Well, on the one hand, it wasn't a huge surprise. This biotech rider, this Monsanto rider, has been in the works in various forms since last year. An attempt was made to attach it to the farm bill that was beat back. And throughout the fall, it was attempted to attach it to the new budget, the continuing resolution, and that was beaten back. I think it was a surprise that it was snuck in at the very last minute without any discussion by our elected officials, by our senators. There, as you called it, this is the Monsanto Protection Rider, the biotech rider, and what is really pretty stunning about it, it's a very short, a short bit of text. It's just about a paragraph long. But it's full of language that very clearly requires the USDA, our Department of Agriculture, to issue permits for planting genetically engineered crops, even when a court has said, hold on a second, these appear not to have been approved with adequate review of their environmental impacts or their rural livelihood impacts and so on. So we have a situation where we've got separation in our Constitution. We have separation of powers, right? We have different parts of the government, and if one part of the government starts to mess up or is colluding too closely with special interests, as in you described well the case with Senator Blunt and Monsanto, we have another part of the government, the courts, that are supposed to look over each other and say, hang on, wait a minute, this is, you know, something's rotten here. We've got to stop the issuance of these approvals. Let's step back and do the legally required impact assessments. But what this simple little paragraph says is that the Secretary of Agriculture shall, that means pretty much has to, upon request by anyone, pretty much a farmer, grower, producer, anyone, to immediately grant permits to plant these new genetically engineered seeds, even when they have not completed their legally required, fulfilled their legally required assessments. So it was a surprise in that this was snuck through and, you know, under cover of night and just passed right on through with huge implications for our for our government, for our democracy, and we can get into this later in the show, for the health and livelihoods of everybody in the country.
Yeah, yes, definitely. So just to be clear here, now, if a court tells Monsanto to stop selling seeds because of a health concern or an environmental concern, Monsanto can continue selling the seeds?
Basically, Monsanto can request, or have a farmer or grower that is contracted with, request to the Secretary of Agriculture, Vilsack, to get a temporary permit, so-called temporary permit, to continue planting while this other issue is going through the courts, while there's some kind of attempt by the courts to fulfill their judicial review. Whoops. So, in essence, then they get a free pass to keep planting, putting this stuff out in the fields while everyone else is, or maybe while some others are thinking, wait a minute, maybe we really ought to look at what the impacts are of this technology before we put it out there into the environment.
And Dave, when you've all at Food Democracy Now! Have looked at this text, what else, what would you add to the way Marcia described it?
Yeah, look, I think Marcia's done a very good job explaining that. Really what it does two things. It does potentially violate the separation of powers between, the Congress and the judiciary by interfering with a regulator's ability to protect, farmers and the environment and public health. The other thing is, by putting this in there, they've basically made it so there is no safety net for farmers who are worried about genetic contamination from Monsanto's GMO product. So the question is, Monsanto calls this the farmer assurance provision. And for some period of time, no one was really sure about why, who was behind it. But when it passed, right as it was about to pass, Food Democracy Now!, we issued a call to action to our members. And initially it was over 250,000. At this point, it's over 310,000 people who have taken action, basically outraged that Congress, working under cover of darkness, with a senator, apparently Roy Blunt, has larded up a continuing resolution spending bill, basically to give a corporate handout to Monsanto and the biotech industry. So what happens, as March explained, during the process, biotech companies will apply for approval to deregulate or to get approval for the planting of new GMO crops. The reason this came about is because a lawsuit was sent up for food safety against Monsanto, trying to stop Roundup Ready alfalfa and Roundup Ready sugar beets. So a district court ruled that the USDA had illegally approved them and that they had to, complete court-mandated environmental impact statements, basically under the National Environment Policy Act. Supreme Court ruled that, yes, that is correct, that the USDA has to follow the laws, which the National Environment Policy Act has been in place for over 40 years. And they violated it when they approved Roundup Ready alfalfa and Roundup Ready sugar beets. So what this does is, when the Center for Food Safety or a farmer tries to sue the U.S. government for illegally approving a new GMO crop, farmers, or most likely Monsanto, farmers that are backed by Monsanto, can tell the Secretary of Agriculture, because it says shall, that they want to continue planting those seeds, even over a multi-year lawsuit. And the reason there's real problems here with this provision is because of the genetic contamination that happens when these crops are planted. Especially, I think the sugar beet one was especially concerning because of where they were going to be planting the sugar beets. It was contaminated organic and conventional sugar beets, and also with the alfalfa and how that negatively impacts organic family farmers. So the other thing is, the reason we oppose this and most groups oppose this from June of 2012 was because really, we don't think our government should be giving special interest handouts or writing regulations that protect corporations over the interests of the environment or America's family farmers.
That is Dave Murphy. He's Executive Director of Food Democracy Now. We're also joined by Marcia Ishii Eitman, Senior Scientist at the Pesticide Action Network, North America. And now I would like to welcome Patty Lavera to the show. Patty is Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch. Hi, Patty. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So we've been talking about what the Monsanto Protection Act actually does. What's really interesting about this is Politico had a piece basically saying that, well, you can really connect the dots back to Republican Senator Roy Blunt. But they also had an interesting comment from Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, and he actually doubts the amendment's legal standing. He, according to the department, quote, Secretary Vilsack has asked the Office of General Counsel to review this provision as it appears to preempt judicial review of a deregulatory action, which may make the provision unenforceable. So what's the update on that? Have you heard anything else from the Agriculture Department on this?
Not in the This is all really happening in the last, you know, week or so. So unless I missed something this morning, I don't think we have any news on that front. But I think it just shows how, you know, how unprecedented this was, what an overreach it is, you know, and it really interferes with the way the process is supposed to work. It's just one of the many, kind of many indications of how outrageous this piece was.
So
and if I could jump in, Rose,
Marcia.
On that point, I was just at the USDA last week meeting with some folks with the Office of Pest Management Policy. And interestingly, this topic came up, and as you said, they said, well, we're looking into, you know, this questioning of whether it's constitutional or not. We're having our general counsel, you know, our lead legal person at the USDA look into it. Well, unless things have changed, the last time I checked, Ramona Romero was serving as general counsel for the USDA. She came straight out of DuPont. Was appointed in 2010 to this job. I don't know if anything has changed in this past year or so, but that's just one example of the revolving door. Food and Water Watch, Patty's got, you know, a whole bucket full. All of us who've been following this issue can point to many others who have been revolving in and out of our government offices, from the big six pesticide and biotech companies. But it was especially ironic, you know, that here DuPont will be looking into whether this biotech protection rider is constitutional or not.
Well, and Patty, a recent Food and Water Watch report looks at Monsanto's close connections to the U.S. government. Monsanto's board members have worked for the EPA, advised the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and served on President Obama's Advisory Committee for Trade Policy and Negotiations.
Oh, that's the short list. Yeah.
Right. I mean, yeah, right. You actually have a huge graphic on your website, but yeah, that's a short list.
Yeah, it is remarkable. I mean, this company has just tentacles, you know, everywhere that you look, and that was one of the hardest things we had to do in writing this report was how to keep it a manageable size when we started to talk about, you know, how far their influence extends. And, you know, probably the most famous example of this, if folks are you know, tuned into the issue of GMOs, is, you know, they have really powerful folks very high up in the FDA. So the most famous is Michael Taylor, who's now he has the nickname as the food czar at FDA. And he did a stint at Monsanto and at a law firm that worked for Monsanto. You know, and this is just one example of, you know, the level of government that they have ties to. So not surprisingly, there's a lot of government policies that seem to go their way.
Well, what about the secrecy of this? Who else knew about this writer? A lot of Democrats said that they didn't know it existed. And how often does that happen? Patty, do you want to take that one since you're in D.C.?
Sure. I mean, so there's the sad thing is that it's happening pretty frequently, in part because of the way that this Congress is operating. And so, you know, this was a provision attached to a bill that was done very, very quickly, you know, under the threat of the government shutting down if they didn't pass something. And so good policy doesn't come out of a process like that. You know, in addition to, you know, it seems like now we know that it was Senator Blunt who did it. For a long time, nobody was taking credit for this little gem. But before that, you know, we were also really trying to draw attention to the Democrats who were running this process in the Senate. And they made a decision to pull parts of old bills and put them together to make it into this continuing resolution, which kept the government running. They recycled old language from previous bills that they didn't have to, including this Monsanto Protection Act piece. And then they didn't let other senators offer amendments to fix it. We were, you know, lots of folks, everybody on the phone, lots of groups were building support for amendments that would have stripped this bad piece out, except they never got the chance to offer it. So there was a lot of process problems, in part because we were always in a crisis over money, and there's always a must-pass bill, and that opens the doors for lots of mischief.
Well, what struck me is in the comments online, a lot of people said, we don't even know where this came from. Is that true, that people didn't even know how the writer got into the budget bill in the first place?
Somebody knew. Whether or not every senator or member of the House knew is you know, an open question, but we'd seen these measures before. In fact, last year in the Farm Bill and also in the USDA's budget bill, there were pieces that did the same thing and actually even a little bit more in terms of how GE crops are regulated. So this was not the first time this idea was dreamed up. And so these pieces were, you know, this piece was recycled from a previous legislation. It didn't have to be. It didn't have to be in there.
Today we're talking.
And on the point of the amendment, there were a handful of courageous senators, Senator Tester from Montana, and our own Senator Boxer, and Gillibrand from New York, Leahy, and a couple of others that spoke out against this rider. Senator Tester was the one who introduced the amendment that Patty was referring to just now, the amendment that never got to have a floor vote, which would have stripped this particular rider out of it. So, you know, it's like all the Democrats, they had their opportunity, the other senators, the Congress had an opportunity to hear the case, and just to hear the case against this rider and why it should be stripped. But, you know, other interests being what they are and the depth of the industry's pocket to be able to, you know, finance the campaigns of so many other senators, effectively silenced public debate on what would have been a crucial discussion that really brings up, you know, an issue of deep public importance. So, you know, many thanks to Senator Tester and the others who made their effort, and I would say shame on all the other senators who, you know, closed their eyes and ears to what was going on. Senator Mikulski, from Maryland, the chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, had an opportunity to really open up the discussion and have this debate, and, you know, it was disappointing that at that point she did not do so.
So you're saying out of 100 senators, just about 5 spoke out on this?
That's all that I have heard of who spoke out on it.
Yeah, those are the... Hi, this is Dave.
Go ahead, Dave.
And Blumenthal as well.
Yeah, Senator Tester offered amendment, and it was not voted on the floor, so it was not allowed under public debate, you know, in the Senate. And I would just say, you know, it's interesting. Roy Blunt, Senator Blunt from Missouri, has claimed credit for putting Section 735, or what people are calling the Monsanto Protection Act, into the continuing resolution. But as we've mentioned, you know, this came up last spring, and then Jack Kingston, who's a congressman from, I think, Georgia, is the one that was slipped it into the Ag Appropriations Bill. And so the interesting thing is no one really was paying attention to groups that are on the Hill and groups that are out here that protect farmers were paying attention to this, but it had not really risen to the level of a public awareness, broad public awareness. The interesting thing is the St. Louis Post-Dispatch last week wrote an editorial condemning Roy Blunt and saying that, you know, Blunt's Montana Protection Act undermines the legislative process. But I think the really important thing that this, and it really calls out Roy Blunt, who has a big history, a long history of, you know, larding up bills with special interest giveaways. I think the last time we tried to do it was to the tobacco industry. And, you know, the other thing, in 2002, he basically said that bootleg tobacco helps terrorists. So he's trying to protect the tobacco industry. So clearly he has ties to agribusiness. But the real thing that the St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial talks about is really this was a bipartisan sellout of the American people and the American farmer. And I think that, you know, we really need to be aware it takes two parties to destroy democracy and also ruin your food supply. And so Senator Mikulski, Barbara Mikulski from Maryland, has been really good on a lot of issues, but she happened to just be asleep at the wheel, and she allowed this into the continuing resolution. the interesting thing is we decided to, at Food Democracy Now, we decided to go after her because she knew it, we knew that she was a part of control leadership controlling this process on the spending bill as a chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. This is where, in this case, the sausage got made for this continuing resolution. And so she and Senator Harry Reid both decided that there shouldn't be a public debate on the Senate floor, that Senator John Tester, the only active farmer in the Senate, there should be no public debate on it. And I think that's an outrage. Some of the senators that I heard that spoke out in favor of it as it was passing were Senator Chuck Grassley here from Iowa. And I think some he's a Republican, and he's very much pro-Big Ag, and his son's a farmer here in the Midwest, here in Iowa. The interesting thing was, Roy Blunt will take credit for sneaking it in this time, but the American people really need to be aware of the fact that, this takes two parties to dance here, and that's very important. And President Obama had a chance to veto it or issue a signing statement on it, and he chose not to.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, because we did a show, it's been about 2 or 3 years now, about a really good documentary. You can actually watch it online for free, called The World According to Monsanto. And it really looks at the Clinton administration's role in all of this, because that's when this company really started, was during the Clinton administration. So we'll add a link to that film on the show website right after, just in about 30 minutes. Today we're joined by Dave Murphy, Executive Director of Food Democracy Now!, Marcia Ishii Eitman, Senior Scientist at Pesticide Action Network, and Patty Lavera, Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch. We're talking about the so-called Monsanto Protection Act, a rider that was put into the budget bill. Not much notice. A lot of people didn't even know that this thing existed until word got out. People protested. People signed petitions, but it was signed. The rider protects Monsanto and other biotech giants from litigation. And we'd love to hear from you on this. What are your thoughts? What questions do you have? How concerned are you about the proliferation of GMOs? And when you hear about just how the system works, that these things are put in quietly, what sort of action can we take on something like this? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. Between 2000 and 2012, Monsanto spent more than $62 million lobbying Congress. And then last year, they spent $32 million, almost half of what they gave to Congress in California, to fight the GMO labeling Prop 37, which did lose. So, Patty, how does this affect concerned citizens?
Oh, well, there's so many ways. Specifically, the effect of this, that piece of the rider that was in the continuing resolution means that we're less protected when it comes to how these crops are approved. And so, it's taken the courts out of the equation, and we've lost a chance to challenge these approvals and say they're bad for the environment, they cause this harm. And so that's, that is absolutely an impact. And then I think there is kind of the democracy question, that Dave and Marcia both talked about as well, that this is not how we're supposed to make government policy on anything, let alone something as controversial and, potentially unsafe like genetically engineered crops. So it really is, it's really just a terrible precedent. I know this is a talk about, biotech and NGE, but there was a comparably bad rider that changes the way that USDA regulates poultry companies and the contracts they write with farmers. And they did the same thing. They kind of gutted that regulation. So it's just a terrible way to make policy. And, the public doesn't win in these scenarios. It's the companies who are spending the money in Washington that win in these scenarios. So, it's part, there is absolutely a negative effect on how we're going to regulate GE crops, but there's also this kind of democracy question. And so then the question is what we do next, and they have to do these budgets again.
And hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. So what are your thoughts about this? What questions do you have? And if you work in this industry, we would love to hear from you on the Monsanto Protection Act. We'll be back after this.
This is your call. To join in today's conversation, the number to call is 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. We always encourage first-time callers. If you prefer to write rather than call, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Programming here on Local Public Radio is supported in part by An Evening with David Sedaris. In celebration of his newest title, Let's Explore Diabetes with Owls, Sedaris will be visiting San Francisco's War Memorial Opera House on Sunday, May the 5th, for an evening of all new readings and recollections. Tickets and information at davidsedarisontour.com.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Agenda for a New Economy series. We'll be talking about President Obama's $3.8 trillion spending budget. What is in it? What is getting cut? What about revenue and tax loopholes? That's tomorrow. And then speaking of taxes, today is tax day. As we speak, there is a corporate tax dodging van that is driving around Washington, D.C., and we'll be talking about media coverage of taxes and loopholes on Friday's show. So be sure to tune in for that. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the so-called Monsanto Protection Act. This is a rider that was snuck into the budget bill. Senator Roy Blunt, a Republican from Missouri, recently told Politico's David Rogers that he worked with Monsanto to craft the rider. It protects Monsanto and other biotech giants from litigation. There was outrage on social media, protests, people signed petitions, but it was signed. And so we're talking about what it does, how this happened, and what precedent this sets. We're joined by Dave Murphy, Executive Director of Food Democracy Now!, Marcia Ishii Eitman, Senior Scientist at Pesticide Action Network North America, and Patty Lavera, Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch. So what questions do you have about this? What does this really say about our democracy when you've got something like this that does affect all of us, that is snuck into a budget bill, and you find out about it, and it's after the fact? So what are your thoughts about that, and what action can we take on issues like this? They're increasing. And if you work in biotech or in agriculture, what are your thoughts on the Monsanto Protection Act and just companies like Monsanto overall that have so much power in Washington? For, in the case of Roy Blunt, the low price of $64,250. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Marie-Louise in Palo Alto. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And I am this time going to direct my question mostly to a person who works for Pesticide Action Network, or is linked to it, but I also am going to have a question after that, or a statement after that. So my question is, I always wonder about people who work for, companies that produce these pesticides, and obviously there's a lot of water that goes through the facilities, and the people are working there. I feel like how many of these people have severe illnesses from this, and that's really a big question for me. I have never in my life bought a pesticide or poison of any kind, except maybe something that unknowingly was poisonous by Monsanto or someone. Anyway, so I'm very interested in if you know something about this, because people who have worked in nuclear power plants, and then they become ill. Mm. So maybe you have an answer for that. And my last part is, I was at one time hearing something very shocking on KQED, and it was that they said this program was supported by Monsanto and Chevron. Mm. They came together, and I nearly fell off my chair because to hear that any of these companies were going to be promoted or at least spoken of as supporting programs for KQED, I thought was more than shameful.
Well, thank you. Good questions, Marie-Louise. Thank you for that. Marcia, you're with the Pesticide Action Network, senior scientist there. What about Marie-Louise's question about workers who have to deal with these pesticides on a regular basis?
Yeah, thank you, Marie-Louise. That's a really important question, because there are numerous scientific health studies that have documented health harms to the workers who are in the manufacturing plants that are creating these, that are developing these pesticides. Case in point, the production of 2,4-D, and we'll come back to it because it's closely tied up with this whole story about the rider and the current crops that are awaiting approval in the USDA's pipeline for new genetically engineered crops. So 2,4-D is an extremely hazardous herbicide, and workers who have been exposed to it while producing it, as well as farm workers who have been exposed to it, as well as anybody who's been out in the fields as it's been drifting around and falling on them, have experienced severe health impacts ranging from reproductive harm and birth defects to endocrine disruption. This 2,4-D causes mutations in cells. It is a very harmful herbicide. And it's a really important point about the workers, you know, at all stages of this, so in the pesticide manufacturing facilities, as well as those who are out there, the farm workers who are growing the crops. And this really, kind of the fact that the pesticide and biotech companies are one and the same, really underscores where the motives are in the quote biotech industry. It's basically all about selling pesticides. Genetically engineered crops are the growth engine of the pesticide industry. As pesticide sales were dropping off some, you know, a couple decades ago, the industry, that's Monsanto, the big six companies are Monsanto, Dow, Syngenta, DuPont, Bayer, and BASF. We call them the big six. And they saw that the way to bump up sales and preserve their longevity was to use this genetic engineering technology, buy up seed companies. We used to have hundreds of independent seed sellers, and now we're down to just a handful, Monsanto and a couple of the others. Monsanto, by the way, controls one quarter of global seed sales, and along with a couple other companies, they control about half of the world's seed markets. So what they began doing was inserting, you know, playing around with these genes and developing this technology to either insert insecticides, the BT crops, into a seed, or engineer the seeds to be resistant to their proprietary herbicides. So again, virtually 100% of the GE genetically engineered seeds that are on the market today have been either engineered to contain a pesticide or to be used with an herbicide. And not surprisingly, we have seen a huge surge in pesticide sales, most notably of herbicides, weed killers like Roundup. The overall increase in pesticide sales associated with the introduction of GE crops, we've seen over 400 million pounds increase in sales over the past 16 years. That some independent scientists have done the number crunching on that, Charles Benbrook, who's at Washington. So what we're seeing is that, you know, this is what the industry is all about, and this is it brings us to why the rider, like why now, why this sudden pushing through and undermining of any semblance of public protection. Well, why now? Right now, there are 19 new genetically engineered crops awaiting USDA approval. So this is what we call the GE pipeline. Of those 19, 14 have been engineered to be used with herbicides. And that's because we've seen the breakdown of Roundup with the massive planting of Roundup-ready crops across the country. We've seen an emergence of weeds that are resistant to Roundup. So now tens of millions of hectares are resistant to Roundup. And the response, instead of the sane, long view of saying, ah, right, it's a big mistake to just be pouring on an herbicide over millions of hectares of land, that's going to inevitably create resistance and superweeds. This ecologist predicted this, you know, 15 years ago. Instead, industry, and in the words of a Dow chemical scientist, he said, this is a great opportunity for chemical companies. And so what's in the pipeline are corn, cotton, and soybeans that have been engineered to be used with herbicides like 2,4-D and like dicamba. And now this is a particular problem because these herbicides, they not only drift when they're sprayed, but they are prone to volatilizing. That is, under warm weather, they turn into a gaseous state and they drift. They can drift for 100 miles, as they did in California not too long ago, down the whole Central Valley. And when they land, they wreak havoc on our health. They've been associated with all these birth defects and reproductive harms I've been describing. Also, for farmers, and this really ought to wake up our senators from our ag states, but right now they're just seeing the dollar contributions from the companies. But our farmers are really vulnerable to this, organic farmers, conventional farmers alike, because pretty much any crop that's not been genetically engineered to withstand 2,4-D, so all the broadleaf crops, like tomatoes and grapes and almonds and all fruits and vegetables, are hugely susceptible to this herbicide. And so we're going to see large-scale damage of farms, family farmers that are already on the brink, just barely making ends meet, could lose large parts of crops. Organic farmers would lose certification as well as crops. And then there's the health of the farm workers and rural communities who would be in the path of these this new kind of waves of herbicides that would be coming our way. So long answer to say, yes, workers are at risk. So are farmers and rural communities and really all of us in the in the country, as we see things like the biotech rider just open the door. Really, the attempt is to ram through approval to make it easy to get this new these 19 crops out into the field as quickly as possible.
That is Marcia Ishii-Eitman, Senior Scientist at Pesticide Action Network North America. And I just wanted to get Marie-Louise's second question answered. Maybe, Dave, do you want to take that one? She was talking about Monsanto advertising. And public health lawyer Michelle Simon writes, the biotech industry, with the help of Congress, is attempting an end run of the judicial system. Since judges cannot be bought off, just go to your friends in Congress instead. Unfortunately, most of the mainstream media have not picked up on this unprecedented big biotech power grab. What are your thoughts about how media coverage is affected by Monsanto's advertising? Because they have advertised on American Public Media Marketplace. And then there is a piece in the St. Louis Business Journal looking at their multi-million dollar marketing budget. They advertise on the Sunday shows, for example. In 2010, they spent $839 million on advertising.
Yeah, I would just say, just like it's a lot easier to rent members of Congress for a $5,000 or $10,000 political donation to the campaign, it's easy to make sure that the Fourth Estate or the media does not really adequately cover this. And I'll just say I have been extremely surprised. I mean, I live in Iowa, so which is kind of the belly of the beast for industrial agriculture. We're very used to hearing the biased stories on GMOs or Monsanto or biotechnology, very pro-industrial agriculture. But, I was also out in California last year. I was the co-chair of the California Right to Know campaign, or Prop 37, and I was amazed at the number of major newspapers whose editorial boards went against supporting Prop 37. And I'm not sure, I don't want to say it's conspiracy of advertisement, but I think that they're very effective. The biotech industry in Monsanto is very effective at not only using their money, but their lobbying power and their talking points. They always seem to infiltrate at every level, the very top echelon. So they have, on the Supreme Court, they have Clarence Thomas. In Congress, they just seem to rent members of Congress for their regular use to get these crops approved or to get protections for them. And then, as Patty mentioned earlier, there's this revolving door of former Monsanto or biotech executives. And I would say, Islam Siddiqui was the former head of Crop Life, who is now a head of the trade representatives here in the U.S. What does his bias as the former head of a pesticide-pushing trade group, how does that impact U.S. trade policy? The question, though, was, about the media, how the media coverage is. And I would say, listen, the Monsanto Protection Act is kind of a story that broke open wider into the mainstream media. It was actually covered, Jon Stewart covered it on his Daily Show. The New York Times covered it. I didn't see any coverage from the Washington Post, but a lot of really big newspapers covered it. And I think really because this is one of the first times, watchdog groups were shining a spotlight on these really undemocratic actions. But this is how Monsanto has operated for more than 20 to over 30 years, especially the last 20 years, with promoting and protecting the flaws in GMO crops and biotechnology. So is this story going to be covered? Is biotechnology, the problem is barely in the mainstream media are the flaws of biotech covered. Occasionally you'll get stories about superweeds. A study came out just a few weeks ago about how superweeds are exploding in farmers' fields. Now, it doesn't sound, you know, super scary, but a real problem is it costs farmers a lot of money in yield, but also in the South, farmers are being forced to get out of their tractors to kill weeds, and they're forced to hire hand weeding crews, something we haven't seen in decades. And that's very costly for farmers to do, and it's going to raise the price of food. This is a technology that has been widely adopted by farmers, and mainly, just like Wall Street sold credit default swaps and toxic assets, you know, and flawed home mortgages to the American public, Monsanto and the biotech industry have been allowed to sell their flawed science. It's really junk science, but the mainstream media hasn't done a very good job of exposing it.
That is Dave Murphy, Executive Director of Food Democracy Now!, Marcia Ishii Eitman, Senior Scientist at the Pesticide Action Network, and Patty Lavera is Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch. And we're talking today about the so-called Monsanto Protection Act, which was included in the budget bill without many people knowing about it. And then it got a lot of attention in social media and then was covered by some big media outlets, as Dave just said. There was a protest in front of the White House, and we learned, thanks to Politico, that this came from Senator Roy Blunt, a Republican from Missouri. So what, do you have any questions for about the Monsanto Protection Act? We've got just about 10 minutes left, so now is a good time to call. How concerned are you about GMOs, or are you concerned about GMOs? And what are your thoughts about just how this process works? If you work in the biotech or agriculture industries, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. We have just a couple emails. John in San Francisco writes, the problem with safety risks and Monsanto stem from the burden of proof for product safety in the U.S. being on the population rather than the businesses offering the food or other products for sale. We are the test rats. The product's tested on us so they can rush their stuff to market, cash in, and then we can bog down the courts later if something goes horribly wrong. Patty, do you think that's the way this is going to happen and roll out in the future?
Well, it's absolutely right, the critique that our regulatory system does have it backwards, right? So it's on groups like ours or members of the public to prove that it's unsafe. It's not the responsibility and really the mandate of the USDA or the FDA to prove that it's safe. And there's a long, list of specific ways the regulations are set up. I mean, I think the most important one is that the data these agencies look at come from the companies that want something approved. They don't have the capacity or the mandate or the money to do independent research to see. And at this point, we know that the Monsanto and the biotech companies are funding enormous amounts of research at land-grant universities, not to see whether these crops are safe to grow or safe to eat, but just to figure out what the next one's going to be. So we really have a very skewed system that's not geared towards figuring out whether it's a good idea. It's just geared towards getting them out on the market. And then we've talked a little bit about labeling, but the labeling problem really compounds this because what we hear back in Washington all the time is, well, show us someone who's sick from these, from these foods. If you're so worried about them, show us the proof. We don't know who's eating them. We don't have a way to trace, they call it post-market effects after they're approved, because we don't tell people what they're eating. So we can't track it. So we're caught in a very vicious cycle here, and the burden is exactly backwards, like the email said.
We do know that about 70% of the food you buy in a typical large grocery store contains GMOs, right?
That's an estimate, yeah.
And so what does the research look like? I mean, has it improved over the last 10 years? Are independent sources looking at health and environmental effects? I mean, where can we look for good research on this issue?
I mean,
and independent research.
Yeah, the independent research we have tends to come from other countries.
Uh-huh.
So it does tend to come out of Europe. It's very, very hard to do that research in the U.S. as an academic. It's kind of a career killer unless you're doing development of the crops. If you're doing safety studies, nobody really wants to deal with you. And there's also legal barriers, like these seeds are not supposed to be sold for research purposes. So there's legal restrictions that make it hard for researchers to even grow the crops to do research on whether they're safe to eat. And so we don't have enough studies. There are some studies that are starting to come out of Europe that show problems. You know, there was a lot of controversy over a particular one that came out in the fall in Europe, and so rather than, you know, holding up very small numbers of studies and fighting about them, we should be setting up a structure to do a lot more studies, to do them over the long term, and to really look at how these foods are different, which is what it boils down to. We're having a really related parallel fight right now is going on about taking this technology into a whole new area, which is animals, and we're having this fight about the really pathetic pool of data that the Food and Drug Administration is using to consider a genetically engineered salmon, which would be the first GE food animal. And there are studies in that packet, the approval packet that they're looking at, there are studies that consist of 6 fish. And that's supposed to be enough to tell us that this is safe to eat.
Wow. What did you mean when you say it's a career killer to independently look at Monsanto?
So, I mean, we did a report about 8 or 10 months ago. We put it out last summer, and we looked at who was paying for research at land-grant universities. So every state has a land-grant university, and they tend to be the agriculture school. And it used to be that the bulk of the money for the research that was done there came from the federal government, came from USDA, and the results would be for the public. You know, so it was improving crops or techniques or, you know, soil conservation or all kinds of things that was supposed to, you know, help farmers be more efficient and more productive. Increasingly, that USDA share of the research money is going down and private companies' share is going up. And if that's where the funding is coming from, that's going to influence the agenda of what the research is. And that's not going to be long-term health studies. It's going to be R&D to get the next version of that biotech crop on the market.
All right. Well, thank you for the email. We've got just a few more we can get in, a few more calls and emails. Let's hear from our next caller, William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes. I'd like to harken back to your question, which was about 20 minutes ago, which is, what can we do about this? And since then, there's been a whole lot of venting, everything but renting of garments and putting on sackcloth to the impossibility of dealing with it. But not one person has mentioned, and I'd appreciate your view about why this might be true that not one person has mentioned. The whole thing is within our control. We just should not buy products where we have an issue with them. If you don't like things that have pesticides, then buy organic products.
Well,
and then the companies get the message. The power is in our hands. I'm a little concerned. I love what these organizations do, but they sort of limit themselves to, I believe, too much to trying to act through a political structure that can really not be penetrated, and the power really rests in our wallets.
Well, you know, I understand what you're saying, William. I mean, if you're lucky enough to live in certain parts of Northern California, great. But if you live in poor areas, you don't have access to organic, let alone fruits and vegetables.
Excuse me. My daughter lives in Fruitvale, and there's a Trader Joe there. And, for instance, you can buy all kinds of organic products there. For instance, I shop at the market on the MacArthur when I go over there. Farmer Joe Market, they have 2 markets there. They've got plenty of organic stuff.
Well, they definitely don't in the Mississippi Delta. You should see the documentary A Place at the Table about this issue. Who wants to take that question? That this is really about citizens saying no to these GMOs and making decisions at the grocery stores or the farmer's market.
I'll take a first stab at it. This
real
is Marcia,
quick.
But I know Dave's got great examples from the heart of Iowa where
okay,
he
and
lives.
Just quickly, Marcia, because we're almost out of time, and then we'll go to Dave.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to say, like, we were getting to the part about what people can do now. And certainly, if you have the ability, do what you can, you know, vote with your pocketbook and all of that, you know, support farmers, buy local, buy organic, buy fair trade. And the market can be a leader and can sometimes drive policy, as in Whole Foods and Trader Joe's decisions not to sell GE salmon has helped spur some Senate Democrats to be in support of GE salmon labeling. So that is important. And at the same time, we do need these big system changes. What I want people to know about this biotech rider is that it's in force for just 6 months. It was passed in the continuing resolution. So all is not lost. There's going to be discussion. It's happening right now. Senators and House reps are beginning to look at the new, you know, we've got to have a new budget. We're going to have a new appropriations bill. And that's where the biotech rider could be reintroduced, may well be reintroduced, and then could be made permanent. So we've got a little breathing room, but we can't wait. We have to be calling our senators. Box and Feinstein are all over this. They're totally, you know, get the problems of the biotech rider. But writing letters to the editor, Contacting friends in other states and explaining the situation, urging them to contact their senators and say, no, protect our democracy. We don't want this biotech rider to be made permanent or to come back. We need to protect, defend our control over our own food and farming system.
All right, thank you. We're going to take one more call, and then I'll get your comments, Dave. Let's hear from Michael in Prindale. Hi, Michael. Prindale. Hi, Michael. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
I've been listening to the show. I'm thoroughly concerned and motivated, but one of the things that hasn't been said on the show is what the average listener can do. Another caller said, oh, well, just buy organic products, which is great if you're the 2% that can have access to that. But aside from buying organic products and maybe writing a letter to your senator, give us, the listeners, something that we can do that will actually make a difference, please.
Yes, and Michael, we end every show with that question, almost every show, at least we try. So, Dave, what about that? What can people do?
Yeah, real quickly. Well, listen, I just want to say what William said. It's a false choice to say that there's organic food in grocery stores, so that's how you can solve this problem. The fact is the biotech companies want the American people to go to sleep and not be involved in the democratic process. That way they can continue to manipulate it and get what they want on our grocery shelves. They have a very specific plan how they're going to take over our food supply. Part of that plan is making sure the American people don't know anything about how these rules and regulations are written. That's why it's important to get involved with groups like Pesticide Action Network or Food and Water Watch or Food Democracy Now or Center for Food Safety, who are watchdogging this issue on a daily basis, whether it's in D.C., the Midwest, Hawaii, or California. Just say, I'm from Iowa. I live in a small town in Iowa, 8,000 people. I could barely buy enough organic food to feed myself a meal.
Mm.
Okay, at my grocery store. My partner and I have to drive an hour and a half to 2 hours one way every 2 weeks to buy groceries for our 4 children and for ourselves. My mother has to drive 3.5 hours one way once a month to make sure that she can load up on organic meats and organic produce. It's outrageous that anyone would suggest to only buy organic that there's a choice in the marketplace. The only way you'll ever have choice in the marketplace is if you put a label on food to contain genetically engineered ingredients. And it's a basic fundamental violation of our fundamental democratic rights not to have that label on these food products.
All right, and we're going to have to end it there, but we will continue to follow this. Dave Murphy, Executive Director of Food Democracy Now!, Marcia Isha Eitman with the Pesticide Action Network, and Patty Lavera with Food and Water Watch. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What's in President Obama's proposed budget? On the next Jura Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about the $3.8 trillion budget. It includes cuts to Medicare and a change to the cost of living formula that determines Social Security benefits. AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka called the changes wrong and indefensible. How much money is set aside for the military? What about revenue and tax loopholes? And what changes would you make to the federal budget? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.